Welcome to another Kundalini After Dark session. I'm your host, Brent Spirit. I'm here in the Zoom room. We've got 35 in the Zoom room. We've got a handful tuning in on YouTube as well. Thank you all so much for joining me live tonight. Our topic tonight is being an empath, being highly sensitive, energetically sensitive. Lots of things to unpack tonight on this topic. We'll explore what this all means. We'll explore some of the difficulties around this. And of course, as you know, I like to share from an empowered place. So while this topic can really be challenging for people to deal with, I think that there's a great opportunity here in being highly sensitive. And so we're gonna look at it from that angle. But of course, this is Kundalini After Dark. So I'll share a little bit, and then I'm gonna open the floor up for others to share as well. And so if you would like to vent and talk about how difficult it is being a highly sensitive person, you're welcome as well. So if you haven't already, you can check out some of the links in the description if you're listening in the archive. If you'd like to join us for the next Kundalini After Dark meeting, there's some courses there as well. We've also got kundaliniawareness.org. We have a directory of licensed mental health professionals with Kundalini Awakening experience there to support you. If you happen to be a licensed mental health professional with Kundalini experience, please submit an application to the directory. We'd love to have you. And March 2026, we're hosting a massive global Kundalini Awakening meditation. So mark your calendar, March 2026, I believe the 28th. I should know this, but I don't. But you can find out at kundaliniawareness.org to join us. Okay. Just remembering here that we're not here to share any medical advice. It's not a substitute for professional counseling, just a spiritual conversation on the internet. So let's talk about being an empath. So what is being an empath? Empath is, of course, this term. It seems to have come out of the spiritual community, the New Age community, referring to those with a heightened sense of empathy, right? So on the one end of the spectrum, we have psychopaths, which seem to lack empathy, and then we have empaths, which seem to have a very heightened sense of empathy, the ability to feel what others may be feeling, to pick up on energies in an environment, to pick up on energies in people's auras, for example, maybe being around somebody if they're in a down mood. An empath can really feel that, and this can also impact their mood, perhaps in a negative way, and cause them to feel, just cause them to feel, period, but cause them to feel sometimes overwhelmed. And so, we refer to this as being a highly sensitive person sometimes, right? Being energetically sensitive. Sometimes, if that is too far out, people will say, hey, you're not really an empath. You're not picking up on spiritual vibes. There's no energy that you're feeling. Some people would say, you're just a really traumatized person that learned how to pick up on people's cues, their mannerisms, their tone, the way they step, the way they walk, their body language. You learn to pick up on those cues so that you can anticipate if someone was in a bad mood, which might mean that they're out to get you. And so you develop those skills very early on, and now you do it subconsciously. And that's why you're so sensitive. You're always picking up on people's facial expressions and micro expressions and the way that their tone shifts. And then you interpret that as, something to be afraid of, and that's what brings you down. So we can look at it from that place as well. But of course, as we know here, this is a spiritual community, and we know there's a lot more going on than just the mundane, right? There's the there's actually is some energy that we're picking up on. We're picking up on people's vibes, their vibrations, right? And so I was inspired to do this episode in particular. Being an empath myself, I don't really use that term when I refer to myself, but for tonight, we'll use that term. Being a highly sensitive person myself, this past Monday we had our Kundalini Q&A meeting, and someone had asked me a question about being an empath, but I misheard their question. I thought they asked me about being in bed when I spent time in bed processing all sorts of intense emotional content as a result of my Kundalini awakening. And so I went on rambling about when I was in bed meditating and crying and stuff like that. And the community was so polite, they let me ramble on. This might be not even speaking about what the person asking the question was asking about. Anyway, after I finished rambling, they said, "Hey, thanks so much, Brent." You know, they were really polite. They said, "Thanks so much, Brent. But actually, I was speaking about being an empath. I wasn't speaking about when you were in bed." And so the empath in me, the highly sensitive person in me, felt so guilty for letting this person down, for misinterpreting their question, that now we have an entire Kundalini After Dark dedicated to being an empath. So this is kind of how we operate sometimes, right? We feel everything so deeply, right? So the guilt of me making an innocent mistake sort of drove me to say, "Hey, how can I make it up to this person?" And so here we are. Now, of course, that's not the sole reason. You know, this also was a theme that was coming up in my life, in my work with other people, this theme of, you know, how do we deal with being an empath? So I thought it's a good time to talk about it. But, you know, I wanted to lead with, you know, the reason that I chose the topic was because, you know, I felt sensitive, I felt guilty. And that's part of the challenge of being this way, right? Whereas, you know, if we look at it in an extreme way, a psychopath doesn't care, really doesn't care. The empath cares, perhaps to a fault, to an extreme. And so let's talk about how we can manage this together. And of course, as you can tell, I'm still working on this myself, right? Still working on this myself. So what does this have to do with Kundalini awakening? Well, of course, as we go through this process, Kundalini awakening can enhance our sensitivity to everything. Everything gets enhanced, especially energetically. And so our heart begins to open, and our heart can begin to then pick up on all sorts of different vibes in the place that we're in relationships, and we're connecting with people. It also seems that it's likely those who are more predisposed to being highly sensitive in general, it seems that they're more likely to have a Kundalini awakening to begin with. And so this seems to, generally speaking, apply to many of the people in this community that are going through Kundalini awakening. It can be a theme that I see, you know, on a regular basis, where people say, "How do I deal with this? This is too much. It's so overwhelming. I can't leave my house anymore, because when I leave my house, I just start picking up on the energies of other people and the environment, and this is just too much ever since this awakening happened." So that's why we're going to talk about it today. Of course, like I was saying, we want to look at it not from a place of being a victim, though. We don't want to just feel victimized by what has happened to us as we become more sensitive, as if this isn't something that can be a great gift, a great, great gift, right? So we want to look at it from an empowered place. Of course, this is a gift, it's not a curse, but if you don't know how to use the gift, well, then you're gonna, you know, get down on yourself about it, right? So as empaths, as highly sensitive people, we're gifted because we can feel. And then, of course, we use those gifts to serve, to offer our support, to inform the way that we move through the world, being mindful that other people are out there. They have big feelings sometimes. You know, sometimes we pick up on people's feelings before they have picked up on them. And in doing so, we can use that to inform the way that we interact with them, you know, from the heart, you know, leading with compassion and love, for example. And so, as healers, as light workers, as people of service that are sensitive, our nervous system is our tool, is our instrument. So that's what we're doing with this nervous system. We're feeling and using that to guide us as we do our work here on this planet, right? There's an ascension taking place. People are going through awakening all over the place. People are hurting. And so that's what we're here to do. That's really what I feel. We're not here to just feel sensitive and not know what to do with it and just, you know, feel like victims, right? So I can share a little bit about my experiences here. As a kid, I was really sick, maybe when I was about like 4 or 5 years old. I had like really high fevers that wouldn't go down. And, you know, I ended up in the hospital. They didn't know what was wrong with me. And I remember being in the hospital and being really terrified. I'm sick. I don't know why I'm there. I don't want to be there. They're trying to strap me down and give me injections and stuff. And I remember just getting really traumatized by this whole experience. So this was my experience in the hospital. When I was a little older, I remember my brother broke his arm. I'm completely fine. It's a broken arm. It's no big deal. I know that it's no big deal. I'm old enough to understand that. But we go to the hospital and we're kind of joking around about it, whatever. It's a light-hearted situation, generally speaking. But I just get completely overwhelmed by being in the hospital, by my own memories of being in there. And then I feel like this dense, heavy energy of being in the hospital, where, of course, people are sick, people are dying, hospital and whatnot. And I'm really picking up on this, and I just can't take it. I can't take it. And I'm bawling my eyes out. And I understand, even back then, I understand that this is not necessarily a proportionate response to the situation, right? It's just a broken arm. He's going to be okay. But I'm really overwhelmed. Okay, my parents spoke to me. They said, "Hey, you know, it's likely you're feeling this way because, you know, when you were younger, you were in the hospital. It's a scary place for you to be." And I can understand that. So I was influenced by the environment, right? I was influenced by the environment. But later on, throughout my process, throughout my awakening process, I came to understand, I thought about this. I said, if we can go into a place and be influenced by the environment, and we can walk in a crowd and be influenced by the crowd, or we get spend time with an individual and we're influenced by their mood or their emotions or their energy, I thought, why don't I take a moment to think about this and realize that if I'm able to be influenced by the environment, then I can also influence the environment myself. I can influence other people. I can influence a crowd, for example. It's not just one way. We're not just at the effect. We can also be at the cause if we step into our power in doing so, right? And so that's how I stepped into recognizing that I don't have to feel victimized by my sensitivity. This is a two-way thing. And so just one brief example, sometime much later in my awakening process as an adult, I drove a friend of mine to the hospital. They were visiting somebody that I didn't know. It didn't feel appropriate for me to go and see the person that I didn't know. So I went to the chapel or the prayer room in the hospital. Many of the hospitals here, at least in North America, have like a room where you can go and practice prayer, meditation, and whatnot. So I went there. And I sat there and I meditated with the intention of radiating healing energy, loving kindness, compassion into the hospital. So that was how I overcame just going into a hospital and feeling like I'm at the mercy of all of the energies here, right? I actually actively stepped into my power and radiated outwards to influence the hospital as opposed to having the hospital influencing me. So I put myself at the cause, not just at the effect. So this is what I mean by stepping into our power here and recognizing here that we do have a gift, right? We do have a gift. Now, whether people felt my healing energy and love and whatnot, I don't know, right? I don't know. We can't measure this per se. Can't measure this per se. But if you go into the hospital and you feel a lot of the big stuff, like I did, well, it's likely that, you can do the same in the reverse. And I think when you're doing it in a positive way, you have the power of the universe, you have the power of God, you have the healing energy of the light on your side. So I think one person can do a lot if they're doing it in a conscious way, as opposed to a bunch of people unconsciously radiating, lower negative pain and whatnot. I think one person radiating consciously can be very, very effective. Very, very effective. So we want to influence rather than be influenced, right? I also suspect that many of the themes that we are sensitive to relate in some way or another to our own history, our own karma, our own conditioning, our own trauma, right? So if there's a theme that keeps coming up as you navigate the world with your sensitivity, if it's a recurring theme, it's likely something that you should become curious about. So this was something that I heard today from another very sensitive person. They shared, if that's a theme that you're noticing, don't just feel like that's what you're being victimized by. Perhaps there's something in your own field that needs to be addressed, and the world is reflecting that back to you, right? Something in your own shadow that needs to be addressed. So I go to the hospital, I feel a lot of big energy because I have a history of pain from being in a hospital when I was a kid. Maybe someone else who's very sensitive, they go to the hospital, they don't feel that much because they don't have a history around it. So it's something to keep in mind. It's often linked to our personal history, and that's where our work lies, right? That's where our work lies. So we can use this to empower ourselves to figure out what's next in line for us to heal within our own fields. Another idea here that was shared with me is about anchoring ourselves in the lower chakras, anchoring ourselves within the gut, within the root chakra, so that our heart, which may be a little bit more unstable at times, it can waver with all of the emotions. If our core, our base is steady, it's anchored like a ballast in a ship, we can be steady. So, energetically speaking, you can consider bringing some awareness into those lower energy centers, breathing with your feet, connecting deeper with the body, not neglecting your heart, not shutting down feelings, but also just bringing the lower chakras online in a more intentional way to keep yourself steady. Otherwise, if we live only in the heart, or we prioritize just the heart in this way, or even the higher chakras, we can kind of become very unstable, like leaves in the wind, kind of going here and there with wherever the energy of the world's of our context or our environment will take us. But if we anchor ourselves, we breathe deep into the lower belly, into the hara, for example, is another word sometimes used to refer to these lower energy centers. It can establish us into a place where we are steady through all of these storms that can come and go. Some other tips here. So we talk about holding space. Holding space, right? Holding space for other people. We want to understand that we're holding space. So when we're connecting with another person, either a friend, a partner, a relationship, whatever, or if it's we're something more professional, if we're working in some form of service, we want to hold space for people and their experience, their pain, and their emotions. But we don't want to hold their emotions. We want to hold space for their emotions, but we don't want to hold their emotions. So if you can see if you can find the energetic place within you that's spacious, that you can imagine almost holding like a container where you're the space, but you're not what is being contained in that space. I think sometimes we get a little confused, you know, when we want to work with somebody, almost as if we want to take on their feelings and hold it. No, we want to hold space for their feelings. So we allow it to come and go. And that may involve feeling at times, but not gripping and holding on to those feelings, just allowing it to pass through your space, to pass through your container, right? Some more practical things as well. And I'm going to open the floor for others to share. I want to hear all of your tips, how some of these things have worked for you, if they have, if they haven't, if you have any ideas as well in your experience. In fact, I'm not actually that very sensitive. I'm not that sensitive compared to other people that I've encountered. I'm really not. So I'm actually fortunate enough. I think that I'm sensitive enough that I get it, but not too much where it's like I'm just like really overwhelmed. And of course, I don't have gifts in the way that others do because of that. But because I'm kind of maybe more moderately sensitive, I feel like I've been able to kind of get a balance and navigate a little bit more easily. That's why I'm able to share about this, but I acknowledge like I'm not as energetically gifted as some of the people that I've encountered, right? Like there's a lot of stuff that goes over my head, energetically speaking, in a sense. But anyway, a practical tip is, you know, when you're walking in a crowd, you can avoid eye contact with people. Sometimes if you make eye contact with people, if you're very sensitive, you're noticing pain in their eyes, micro expressions, you're noticing all sorts of things, and you can't help but somehow try to process it or interpret it or take it on. And so maybe you feel obligated, and perhaps it's a people-pleasing thing or a cultural thing where you feel obligated to like look people in the eye and give them your full presence and see them, and you want to be that way, and I understand that. But perhaps it's best at times if you just avoid making eye contact in crowds. Something to consider, you know, very practical. Having boundaries, practicing boundaries. Very, very effective. It's become almost like something we talk about all the time, that it's come to a point where it's almost like something we take for granted, perhaps. Maybe I'm speaking for myself, but it's very, very important to have effective boundaries here. So sometimes maybe you're very sensitive. Somebody invites you to, you know, here in Toronto, there's a lot of street fests happening right now. So maybe somebody invites you to a street fest and there's just hundreds, thousands of people walking around in the street. It can be a lot for somebody that's energetically sensitive. Now, maybe you don't feel like going. You don't have to go. You don't have to go in the name of being an empowered, highly sensitive person. You can also just say no. Often, we find it difficult to say no to go to an event for the same reason that we don't want to go to the event in the first place, because we're sensitive, right? We don't want to go be in a crowd because we're going to pick up on all sorts of emotions. But then we also don't want to say no to the person because we don't want to pick up on their feeling of rejection or abandonment. And so we're put in this position where we don't know what to do. And so this is where just having boundaries, being assertive, taking care of yourself becomes really, really important. It's okay to say no. There's a great book out there on assertiveness called When I Say No, I Feel Guilty. If this applies to you, you know, it's a great book to check out. But this is something to keep in mind. Like you don't have to give in to things you don't want to do, to go places you don't want to be with people that you know you maybe don't want to be around, or maybe not at that time because you're not feeling up for it energetically, right? Many of us are here in this space. We're going through significant awakenings. Generally speaking, we'll be called to serve in some way. We'll be called to serve in some way in service. Naturally, our heart opens. We recognize a high degree of oneness with other people, with the world. And so naturally we say, okay, this is all me. What can I do to help, to serve? And so this is a big part of this path. And so for those that we may call being light workers, people being of service, if you're operating in some sort of official capacity, not just, being a low-key incognito light worker, but you're actually offering some sort of service, or you'd like to get into offering some sort of service, having boundaries around that is very, very important. Having boundaries. So offering your service within a specific time frame, not outside that time frame, only within that container, because outside of that, you're going to need time to recharge, to take care of yourself, to just be alone, right? But when you go into those containers, into a session with somebody or into a group where you're working with them, then you know what you're signing up for. You know that you're going to pick up on things, but you're going to pick up on things that you're going to use to benefit the service work that you're doing. And so having containers with time, very, very important. Putting limits on, if you're going to meet with somebody, you tell them, hey, it's going to be 1 hour, but after the hour, I've got to get going. And you may not have anything going on after that 1 hour. You may be free, but that doesn't mean you have to be available to continue to support them, right? So you have to have some boundaries on the work that you're doing. And money is a great way to employ boundaries here by charging money, right? So when we charge money, we are saying my time is valuable. And we take that money and we use it towards self-care in whatever way that means for us, taking care of ourselves. But it also ensures that people who want to take advantage of you, your kindness, your empathy, your open-heartedness, it weeds them away. It wards them off if you're going to put a price on what you're offering, because then only very serious people are going to come to you, and they're going to really have something invested in working with you, and so they're going to get the most out of what you have to offer. Whereas if you're just offering it to anybody and everybody at, 24/7, you're going to get people that just come and take advantage of you, and they walk all over you. You become like a doormat, right? For example. And so, Kundalini moves up the spine, right? We want to have a spine in this sense, right? We want to be able to put up boundaries and say, no, this is what my time is worth. These are the hours that I work. I'm not available. I am available here. And it's okay to be assertive. It's very, very important. And in fact, it's a good example for the people that we're working with to be assertive as well. So, of course, this is how we ward off things like compassion fatigue. So, of course, this here as Brent Spirit, I don't work in the capacity of a therapist. Outside of this, I do. And in our training, it's emphasized excessively about self-care. And in fact, we're ethically obligated to focus on our self-care. If we're not taking care of ourselves, we're actually breaching the ethical agreements that we have taken upon ourselves to do this role. And we could lose our license or get reprimanded if we're not taking care of ourselves. It's ingrained into the work, right? Because we've understood that compassion fatigue is a thing, that we do get burned out in doing this work. It's very intense to work with people that are going through intense stuff. And so we have to take care of ourselves. So you can borrow something from the profession of psychotherapy, for example, and apply it in your own way, where you ethically obligate yourself to focus on your self-care, right? So many ways for self-care. We all know these different ways: moving our body, exercising, spending time in nature to recharge, spending time alone, connecting with other people who maybe are light workers in their own right, and we're seeking their support, right? Maybe that's another healer, a therapist, yoga teacher, somebody to meditate with, whatever it may be, a community like this. Doing those things for ourselves as well, very, very important. As well, when we get all these emotions coming through, we don't want to feel too victimized by them. We can actually use them as fuel to create incredible things, right? To channel them into art, to channel them into as energy to inspire us. So I typically lately have been trying as best I can. I seem more drawn to like high vibrational music, for example. But lately I've been listening to Linkin Park. And I was just thinking about like, why am I listening to this stuff where it's kind of whiny, to be honest, but I'm enjoying it. And I thought about it, and I thought, when you think about Chester, the lead singer, the former lead singer of Linkin Park, he's passed on now. If you, I started to think about it. His story is pretty challenging. And so when he's like singing about all this like negative stuff, he's singing from a really authentic place. Like you can really hear it in his voice. And especially if you get the context around the stuff he's been through, then you can really hear it. And I think that's what was drawing me to it, was it was just authentic. And he's really channeling that emotion into something incredible. Like, he's gifted us with this music. And so we can do the same for the world as well. You don't have to sit at home and just cry. You can if you want, but you don't have to just do that. You can turn it into something meaningful and use it as fuel, as energy, as inspiration, and to create art. And art doesn't have to be all nice and high vibratory in that sense. As long as it's authentic, that's what makes it so meaningful. So we want to flow that energy rather than just let it pool within our system, because that's when it can really weigh us down. So we want to meditate with it, right? Meditation means just being with the experiences, allowing it to come and go, recognizing that it's all impermanent, allowing it to flow through your system without suppression, without just bottling it up, but letting it be there, feeling it, right? If you have to cry, you cry. That's okay, right? There's also some spiritual practices that we can do, some energetic practices. We can engage in rituals, right? We can sage the environment that we're in. We can sage our aura, our field, to clear negative energy. These things can help. We can have crystals that do this kind of stuff. We can invoke our guides. We can do all sorts of different practices. We can chant mantras that clear the space, clear our energy, clear negative energy. We can light incense, candles, all these types of things. They can be very effective. They can be very effective energetically. A lot of these things have been empowered by many people, billions perhaps, around the world throughout history that have been doing these things, that have charged them energetically for specific purposes. So when we do them, when we engage in these rituals, we're tapping into all of the momentum from all the other people that have engaged in those rituals. But ultimately, the way I see it is all this stuff essentially gives you permission to feel safe, relaxed, confident about your own energy field, to feel empowered. So you can invoke your guides and say, okay, I've invoked my guides to come and protect me from all the negative energies of the world. Or you can just say, I'm a being of light, I am protected. They both reach the same ends. Ultimately, it's a feeling of being safe and protected. How you get there is up to you. You can use crystals and chanting and mantras and whatever you want. Or if you're more of a simple person, you can just find the place within you that knows that deep down and is unwavering in that feeling of safety and being protected. So you can get there from so many different places. That's how the rituals work. So they're not for everybody. Some people see that and they just get overwhelmed, or they don't want to engage in anything that's too specifically oriented around a religion or a particular tradition or whatever. You don't have to. You just find the feeling within yourself. That's ultimately what the rituals are doing anyway. They're pointing you in that direction. As well, you can also explore reading books about being energetically sensitive, taking trainings around using your gifts. So the trainings will contextualize your gifts and explain how you can actually use them in a meaningful way, how you can actually take what may be overwhelming and use it to serve, right? So some trainings will give you the context, will give you the tools, will maybe even set you up with the right language and whatnot. Maybe some of those trainings you can turn it into a job or something, for example. So rather than just acting confused about what all this is, you can educate yourself. And by educating yourself, of course, then you understand what this is. This is a great gift that we have. It's a great gift. There is a phase, of course, where some of us may have to just feel all of this. None of these things that I've shared are going to help. You may just have to just cry for the pain of the world. Like, let your heart break open as you note how much pain and suffering there is in the world. I'm not saying that you can't be in that place too. Just know that if you're there, remind yourself that it is just one phase of the journey. It's not the final resting place. Eventually, there's a maturity that comes online, which doesn't forget the pain of the world. It just recognizes that there's something that you can do about it, as opposed to just sitting at home and crying about it. You can do something about it. And from that place, then you can still be sensitive to the pain, but also feel empowered to offer your compassion through service in whatever that way may be for you. Of course, there's direct ways you can do through, volunteering or maybe stepping into a specific profession or role energetically as well. Like, for example, like I was saying, you can just meditate, for example, in the hospital, radiating it outwards with that intention is very, very effective. So finally, I'll leave you with one last idea here, and then I'm going to invite others to share as well, which is, AI has come to the forefront of our culture here. It's doing everything essentially, except what the highly sensitive person is gifted with, which is to feel, which is to feel. It will never be able to feel, right? And so now may be an opportunity. While everything else may be taken care of in some capacity, the one thing that won't be will be to feel. So this may be a chance to step into your role and to do this work in a conscious way. We have a crisis here of people avoiding feeling, right? People avoiding feeling. We have a mental health crisis, we have addiction crisis. People haven't got it sorted out with how to feel their emotions. And so being highly sensitive, this may be a direction, a lane for you to find and lock into and to grow. And I think in the future, this is going to be the most important skill. I think schools are now going to just be teaching essentially about how to use AI and whatever, and then how to actually feel your emotions. Emotional intelligence is going to be the next big skill that we are going to have to learn very quickly. And I think it's people like us that are going to lead that movement. And so I'll wrap it there. I want to open the floor for others to share as well. I know I just dumped a bunch of ideas on you today. We'll see if that sparked any conversation. Maybe you have some things to relate, some questions for myself or the group, some ideas, some tools. If there's something on your mind that you've come with tonight that isn't exactly related to the topic at hand, that's welcome here too. We open the floor for whatever may come up. Once again, check out the links in the description. You can join us for the next Kundalini After Dark meeting. You can join us for Kundalini Q&A meeting, kundaliniawareness.org. Check it all out. Thank you all for being here. Let's see what's coming up for everybody. So Christian shares here in the chat, as an empath, historically, I would avoid crowds because I couldn't handle the feelings and or energies of others. At almost 54 years of age, in a career where I'm constantly in groups, I've learned to control it. I've learned to really push energy from the heart, and this really opens space for me to shelter from the overwhelmingness of others. This also helps me focus in on those energies that I want to participate with. That's brilliant. Brilliant. Yeah, thanks for sharing, Christian. Let's hear from Angelina.
I work with individuals and groups, and what I have learned, especially with groups, is I pay careful attention to what I eat before I'm going to facilitate so that I'm eating foods that are grounding me. And for me, that's sweet potatoes and chocolate, and I hate to say it, but good old meat, cloved hoof is very grounding. I also make it a point to walk around the room barefoot so that I'm grounded and I set the energy in the room of being very grounded. And the third thing that I find helpful is I start every session, no matter whether I'm teaching or facilitating, with a setting of intentions. The question becomes, what makes this worth your time and energy for the next however long it's going to be? And I find when I can set intentions, people take greater ownership rather than handing it over to me, like, you're going to solve this problem. And then I'm really caught up in, oh my God, they're all coming at me. So I think when you find a way for people to own what it is they're in the room to do, you wind up, you're still very sensitive to what's going on because I'm very empathic, but you're able to shift the energy and have them take greater ownership of what the issue is in the room.
That's brilliant. Yeah. Thank you for sharing. Yeah,
Thank you.
we don't want to stop being sensitive. We want to use it in a way like you've described. You're very intentional, very conscious. Yeah, thanks, Angelina. And
Thank you.
yeah, I eat meat as well. I find it to be grounding for
Yeah,
myself.
right. And interestingly enough, halfway through my programs, I pass out chocolate and sweet potato chips. They don't know that I'm grounding them, but I'm grounding them.
Nice. Yeah. Two very safe foods, generally speaking. Most people like those things. Yeah, thanks, Angelina.
Thank you.
Let's hear from Allison. Hugo shares here, I'm realizing that I get heaps of people opening up to me, saying things like, I've never said this to anyone before. They feel like they can share something with me, like shame or pain, as I can listen without judgment. After they share with me, I can see them feel so much lighter. It's incredible. Yeah, that's brilliant. I can get the sense from the way that you're writing, Hugo, that like you're not feeling like them sharing is a burden, almost like you've recognized your role here is to help lighten their load a little bit by listening without judgment. Yeah, Billy shares here, the heart can waver, but it is very strong and can actually hold all of the world's suffering within it. And Allison adds here, a tender heart is stronger than a brittle heart.
I'm going to come back with something else. I find after I do my service, whether it's the group or the individual, it's very important that I come home and physically shower. I have to clean off energetically what I have picked up so that it doesn't affect me. I can protect myself when I do my work because I've learned over the years how to protect myself. But I find that if I can shower at the end of the working with people, at the end of every day with that process literally kind of washes away some of what, whether I want to carry it or not, I'm carrying.
Great insight as well, right? The water itself is a ritual, it's cleansing. For those who may be looking for a little bit of another way of doing it, I was taught that between sessions, for example, maybe you can't take a shower, you don't have time or whatever, or it's impractical, just cold water on your forearms. Forearms down to your fingertips with the intention of clearing the energy. Yeah. Allison says, I just wanted to share that I've been discovering how important creativity is for me as an empath. When I'm creating, I know my own energy better. So I can recognize when I'm taking on another person's emotions and release it. That's great. Yeah. Yeah. I was thinking as I was coming up with some of the things to share today, I thought of being sensitive has to do with the senses, of course, and that's what art is, right? It's all about the senses, right? So it's all connected here. It's all connected here. The greatest artists were likely just like us, highly sensitive, empaths. They found an avenue to express that energy so that it didn't burden them so much, and they give us these gifts as a result. Right. Let's hear from Sean.
Hi, Brent. Thank you for allowing me to take the floor. I do acknowledge, like, and also I would say share similar sentiments when it comes to being an empath and feeling like the physical part of it, like when you're in crowds. So I think for me, it's like finding different ways to dealing with that. And learning how to actually like just move the energy. Like sometimes I would get like the head pressure when I'm around a bunch of people. So I've been trying different like breathing techniques. So if you can kind of speak to that, like when you're in the moment, like any tips on it.
Yeah, on head pressure specifically.
Just I think just mostly based off of people who have experienced the Kundalini and how it rises up. Sometimes when it's overwhelming, you can feel the pressure a little bit. I think that's due to like having like the crown chakra open a little bit. So
Right.
just wondering like different, like maybe something that you might do if you've ever experienced it.
Yeah. So head pressure is very, very common, and of course, it can come on for so many different reasons under so many different contexts. Of course, like you're sharing, Sean, being in a crowd, being sensitive to the environment and whatnot. but it can also come on just as part of our process. If we're engaging in a lot of specific spiritual practices, it can do that. So what I generally share is if it's manageable, if it's not painful, it's not so uncomfortable, it's mild, it's there, but you can still get on with your life, just let it be. Don't try to make it go away or see it as a problem. There's work being done there in the head, and that's what you're feeling. If it is like really excessive, it's unmanageable, you can't do anything. Then okay, there's some things that you can explore, of course. very quickly, the most practical, easy thing you can do is put the tip of your tongue up just behind the two front teeth on the roof of your mouth. This creates an energetic loop where excess energy from the top section of your face, of your head, can flow through the tongue and down the neck and into the rest of the body. This can help if there's excess prana and pressure there. This can bring some relief. You can give it a try. You can also train yourself to just keep your tongue up there throughout the day and whatnot. That can be your tongue's new resting place. It may take some time to practice, but eventually it will just become a default thing and be very natural for you. Avoiding, of course, any significant third eye meditations or crown chakra meditations, avoiding anything that's the kind of head-based, that's just adding to the pressure, just putting prana up in your head, putting the kundalini up in your head. You don't need to do any of that sort of stuff. You can even talk to the energy as well. The energy is the energy of God, it's the energy of your body, it's all the same thing. And you can talk to it and say, hey, like, this is a lot, can you take it easy on me? Or you can say, hey, right now I'm at work, this is making it difficult for me to be at work, can you take it easy on me? But when I get home, I'll meditate, or I'll be in my room or my space, or I'll go on a walk, and you can have your way with me, Divine Mother Shakti. So you can talk to it in this way, and you can see what happens. And this type of negotiation can apply to any type of intensity throughout the process. Maybe you're getting a lot of intense spontaneous kriyas, spontaneous movements. You can have the same type of negotiation as well. Bringing your attention to your feet, breathing with your feet can help as well. It can bring some relief to any excess head pressure as well. Breathing into the lower belly, these things can help. Eating grounding foods like we were talking about, like Angelina was sharing, for example, meat, sweet potatoes, chocolate, these types of things. Protein and fat, generally speaking, are more grounding, more satiating in that sense, give you a little bit of ballast. But if it's not painful, not unbearable, let it be there. There's work being done there. There's work being done there. That's why you're feeling there's something going on in your head, because something is going on in your head. The kundalini is perhaps, opening up your crown chakra or whatnot. So just let it do its thing.
Yeah, thank you for that. I appreciate the comments. I think it's just, I guess I've been going through this for like a couple of years now, and I've been trying to find like groups like this, so just kind of learning all the tips to the trade. So thank you.
Yeah, welcome. Thank you for being here. Yeah, you're in good company here. And if others have some tips for Sean, please share. I have on my website a free ebook, audiobook called the No Nonsense Grounding Guide. It has some tips to manage some of these things, head pressure, feeling spaced out, feeling depersonalized, these types of things. It's completely free. You could check it out. And if you would like to go even deeper, I have an entire course. It's 8 hours of video content called Grounded Spiritual Emergence and Integration. So you can check that out on my website as well. And the links are in the description. Let's hear from Blue Star.
Hey there, good evening.
Hi.
Hey, my name's Blue Star, and I had a Christo Kundalini awakening about 30 years ago. And I work as an energy healer, basically as an exorcist. And so I kind of have a different perspective on the energies. And I feel like, when we're going through this big detox of Kundalini, it's important to have a practice that fully refreshes the energy in your system. So whether it's yoga or tai chi or a self-clearing energy healing practice, that will really help with the pressure in the head or in any of the chakras. excuse me. And then also some other things I'd like to bring up. Where I work, HSP, highly sensitive person, means also high sensory perception. So, and that's that as an energy healer, working in the energies over time, yeah, your perception greatly expands. Something else to consider is that there's about five different aura types. So the different aura types will experience energy differently in the environment. So some people's auras naturally transmute all the energies around them. They take the dark negative energies and actually transmute that. Some people need to be around a lot of energy. And yeah, so there's different energy types, and people will respond to the environment the way that their auras are configured. So
Brilliant.
I don't think there's anything else I want to add to that. But and I will say, you already brought this up. Being highly sensitive as an energy healer, sensitivity is my tool. And that's and I feel like the further we go along in our process, and the more we meditate, the more we detox our system, what we're also actually doing is equalizing the internal forces and energies within, and equilibrating it with the energies without. So, like a diving bell that's rising up through the water, the meditations and all go a long way towards relieving a lot of that pressure. But as we go along and energetically we're clearing our systems and detoxing on so many levels, and we're calling all of our power back to us, and we're becoming energetically sovereign, this also will naturally help us begin to cultivate really good energetic boundaries. So, yeah.
Brilliant. Thank you so much, Blue Star. I like the language you used there. I mean, throughout your entire share, but particularly when you said energetically sovereign.
Yes. Yeah, and
Beautiful.
that's, and you know, I feel that's our whole journey, is to become energetically sovereign, to get to the point where we perceive, where, people have hoses and hooks and faucets into our system, where we can perceive, multidimensionally, the implants or whatever that we need to clear from our system, any multidimensional interferences. And yeah, so energetically sovereign is the goal, because we get to the point where not one thread is siphoning off our power and our energy, and the best offense is a good defense.
Well said. Thank you. Blue Star, I'm
Thank you.
curious if you could type in the chat if you have a resource about the different aura types that you mentioned. If there's like a some more
Yeah.
information you have for us about that, that would be great. If you have a link or anything like that.
Yeah, I'd be happy to. Thank you.
Great. Thank you so much for sharing your insight. Let's hear from Tawny.
Hi.
Hey, Tawny.
I'm definitely an empath and a highly sensitive person, and I've always really liked that I am. I mean, I can feel the draw from my body energetically, but I really like that when I can sit with somebody and they're talking to me, and sometimes I'll start to like even feel what they're going to say before they even get it out, and I'll start to like tear up. I'll start to like really feel that, and it's on my face, and they might not be able to feel that. They might not even be crying. This happens to me very much with people who don't really have access to their emotional world. Yet, they're speaking of something that's troubling to them. And just by me feeling for them, they start to be able to feel. And I love that. And I also have felt that every tear that I cry for someone that I care about empathetically, I always just think, well, maybe it's a tear they don't have to. Like, we have so many tears, And so I frequently, like when I walk, and I'm pretty friendly, so I'll just say hi to people. And some people are just stone. They just like they kind of just stonewalled. And for a second, it's so jarring to my system. Like I'll feel part of my energy goes out to them. Like it goes out to them. I don't know why, but I literally feel my energy leave me and go, well, not like completely and not in a really bummer way for only a few seconds, but I'll feel my energy go to them and it's like in a friendly hi, and they don't return it, and I still feel my energy is going. Maybe it might be helping them in some level, but I don't even understand how people wouldn't be open to another people, but they're not. But I can literally feel my energy going out and touching them. And being I'm pretty a heart-centered person, I think that's probably good energy for them, even though, but I've also kind of noticed from different people who are empaths and highly sensitive people, I've noticed that they might have one person they're more in tuned with even than the other people. Like even my son, his best friend since two, when his best friend goes down, my son freaks out because he knows he's going to have to feel all that his best friend feels. And he doesn't do that with everybody. Like he doesn't feel he cares about mine, but he doesn't have that same thing. And I have a couple people too that, man, when they go down, I really, really feel. And in a way, I kind of think that we're little guardians of certain people in a sense too. Also, I was looking up what Jung said about this, and he was saying that a differentiating between an evolved empath and a struggling one, and there's just 5 points if I could just read them.
Please.
And he said, a struggling empath absorbs others' pain unconsciously, and the involved empath feels deeply but knows what's theirs. Struggling empath overwhelmed easily, an evolved empath centered and grounded. A struggling empath tries to fix or rescue, and an involved empath witnesses and reflects truth. Like, I really like that one. Like, because a lot of times when I'm hanging with someone and I'm sharing, I don't want them to fix it. I don't want them to rescue me. I just would like if they just listen, and witness me, right? And if they have any insights, truth, that would be awesome. So a struggling empath, emotionally drained, and an evolved empath, energetically balanced. And a struggling empath, confused about identity, and an involved empath, rooted in authentic self. So just like everything down here, polarity, we get the one and we get the other, and probably going to get some of it. But I kind of that kind of like we can kind of see what kind of empath are we? Are we totally struggling empath, or do we have some evolved edge to this as well?
Yeah, amazing. Thank you. Thank you, Tawny, for even showing us that there is like an alternative to being the struggling empath. I think a lot of people may not know that there actually is a way that we can hone these skills and thrive with them. And so you've given us, perhaps some of the qualities that we can aspire to, which is great. Yeah.
Yeah, one more thing I could just say too is like for me personally, I feel like we all are made by God, and God decides what we are. And if God made us an empath, I just think it's a good thing, and that we can work with it. We can work with it in a positive way, and deeply feel. There's a lot of healing in feeling.
Yeah, beautiful. Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, and I like what you share about, there's the language you use was like there's a few people that maybe we're guardians of in that way. And it seems like there's cords that that get formed between particular people, and that's like, maybe the means by which we are able to be sensitive to their particular emotions and whatnot, and that helps us to relate so deeply. It's beautiful, right? It's beautiful. Yeah.
Too, as a mama, there's a lot of research about the cord. When you said cord, like the umbilical cord never really goes away between us and our children, or us and our mom. And they even have research now that in when the baby is in the mommy's tummy, a lot of her cell, a lot of the newborn fetus cells are going into the mother. So the mother is actually being fed the baby and energetically is connected to that baby even when the cord is cut. And me as a mom, I know that, my heart doesn't just beat inside me. My heart beats with my four children and where they are as well. So it's just pretty, like, wow.
It's beautiful. Yeah.
Thanks.
So that's a great example of the benefits of being energetically sensitive. And it's primal. It's we all have some connection with that in some capacity. Amazing. Thank you, Tawny. And Life of the Jocker shares that they were just gonna share the Carl Jung piece. Nice. We're all in sync tonight. Let's hear from Aiden.
Hello, Brent.
Hey,
Hello,
Aiden.
everybody. So I wanted to just kind of share throughout my Kundalini awakening, just kind of like how I've kind of learned emotions and stuff like that. And maybe that will maybe help somebody, or I'll just let it kind of flow. So I found early in my life, I used to, like when I was a teenager, I used to use and I didn't really realize it at the time, but I used to use stuff like nicotine, I used to use marijuana, I used to use all kinds of things in order to kind of cope with some very heavy emotions, which is something I've had throughout my life, and it's something that remembering now, that even when I was like much younger, I had a very deep kind of I had a lot of deep emotions, which kind of got suppressed after a while. And it was very interesting because, up until, which I think maybe started the Kundalini awakening, I had a psilocybin trip, in December, of 2021, and it was bringing up so much. And at first it was dissociation, and it was so intense and so like crazy. I was like, what the hell is going on, right? Like it'd be very grim, very like strange, very odd. But I think what I realized, it was crazy because as I've decided to actually start working through this stuff, I'm kind of a newbie with like actually integrating stuff. In the middle of like I've in the last since last July. And around that time, I realized it was a Kundalini awakening. But it's interesting because a lot of the dissociation and a lot of the properties, what I realized about it was like, it was so surprising to me. I was like, wait, this isn't just like my mind fucking with me. Like, these are like emotions that like never got to like see the surface, And I think you can really get into a moment. And I've had this for like at least like 3 or 4 years of just like why is this happening to me? Like panic attacks, all types of things. I think it's just like some grim, weird situation. But and I'm really actually glad that we're talking about emotions today because I was talking about that last time that I was on here. So I think that's fantastic. But yeah, it's surprising how much material and things that you feel are genuinely things that you need to address and not just like what we can convince that our mind is just like messing with us and stuff. And I think that's just very important to take into consideration. And that's pretty much it.
Yeah, thank you so much, Aiden. Yeah. I agree. I don't think it's our mind conjuring up emotions out of nowhere for no reason just to mess with us. Like this does have some origin in some event or something in our life that maybe we didn't have the safety, the energy, the tools, the resources to actually feel it back then. And so maybe we coped with something or the other. But this process demands that we feel it all now. And sometimes that means that we have to create the safety and the context in order to do so. Yeah, but then it comes up and we got to feel it. Now, this process basically says, okay, no more bottling it up. Yeah. Life of the Jackal shares here something I use actively, especially when I'm doing intense emotional sessions with other people, is something Alan Watts talks about a lot, which is the art of letting go. It can even be applied in places such as social settings. It's okay to feel even other people's emotions, in my opinion, as long as you don't cling to them and let them pass on through. Yeah, that's great. Yeah. Yeah, I guess that's what I was trying to say with, we hold space for the emotions. We don't hold the emotions. Like, we hold space for other people and their experience, but we don't hold their experience itself. Right? I like how you put it here. As long as you don't cling to them and let them pass on through. Great. Christian asks on the YouTube chat here, is Kundalini inherently dangerous without guidance for the solo practitioner? No, I don't think it's inherently dangerous. I think it's inherently transformative and healing. Can it bring about great difficulty? Yes, absolutely. When you use the word solo practitioner, I'm imagining somebody actively engaging in powerful techniques to manipulate and stimulate and rouse kundalini, such as visualizations and breath work and pranayama and, maybe psychedelics and things like this. It can definitely be very effective, but it can bring a lot of difficulty, especially if a person has begun to play around with kundalini, for lack of a better word, without proper preparation of their system, without proper context, without proper tools and resources in place. It can be very, very challenging. But I feel that there's many people that have navigated this journey without direct guidance from a teacher or a guru or being involved in a particular tradition, for example. And, they make it through the difficult parts successfully. I don't like the fear-based ideas of talking about Kundalini as this dangerous thing and it can kill you and it can invite demons and these types of things. I really don't buy any of those fear-based ideas. I think this is the most beautiful transformative process that a human being can have, the opportunity to experience. Can it be challenging? Yeah, but so can many other things in life as well. So we don't want to look at it as if it's a scary, scary thing. Just the right context and understanding can make all the difference. Quincy shares here, I notice other people's emotions and never feel them. I spent some months around someone who was in a really bad place in every way, and I never felt bad around this person. I felt perfectly fine, but whenever I would leave their presence, I would start crying. This was shortly after the energy activated. And then Allison adds here, for me, the absorption can definitely be delayed. Very interesting. Very interesting. Yeah, I can see that happening as well. When you get to your space, then you're able to feel it. Yeah. Allison adds here, another recommendation I would make is to cut down drastically on the news and social media or set certain times to take a break, especially if your mental health is suffering. Don't feel guilty about it. Yeah, great. I agree. I agree. We were never meant to scroll past like 100 different emotionally charged pieces of content within the span of a few minutes. That was never meant to be how we kind of move through the world, right? And so yeah, for those that are sensitive, like that's maybe the equivalent of being in a crowd of people and all these different energies coming at you suddenly, right? You're seeing all these different things online and social media and all this whatnot. Can be a lot for a sensitive person. Angelina says, and it's not a popular idea, but eliminating caffeine, alcohol, and sugar helps. Yes, I agree. Still working on the sugar one, but yeah, we are sensitive to people's emotions and energy as well, often to the things that we put in our body through food and substances and stuff. Definitely. Let's hear from Blue Star.
A couple of helpful tips, I hope. And when we're empathic, we do sense it energetically, and if we don't have good boundaries, our being will tend to take it on physically. So, for instance, in some sessions that I do before I got better at clearing myself, there would be projectile vomiting, and this was my system immediately detoxing from any of the energies that I would pick up. And being highly sensitive, I feel it's really important, that we get good at distinguishing what's ours and what's other people's stuff. And I used to take a Kundalini yoga class. And every time I went in there, everybody always looked so zen and serene. And here I am in there, and Kundalini yoga is so effective because it's like it wrings out all your glandular system, which is the physical manifestation of our chakra. So I'm looking around at everybody, and they're looking so zen and serene, and I'm just feeling all this crap, my spiritual crap, and I'm feeling so spiritually filthy. And come to realize years later, oh, that was everybody else's stuff. That wasn't my stuff. So I feel like part of the job is we have to get better at recognizing what is ours, what is other people, and recognizing when people are dumping their crap on us. So, environment is everything. So never go into a Walmart or a casino because these are all casinos. There's so much low frequency energies there, addiction energies. Entities thrive on addiction energies, So environment, and then just trust your own inner bell.
Brilliant. Thank you so much, Blue Star. Yeah. Taking it on from other people, it reminds me of Sri Ramana Maharshi. He was sick, he had cancer, and I guess he was dying. And, his devotee said, you have all this pain you're carrying. Why don't you give it to some of us? We can each take it on a little bit for you, and that way you can, stick around a little bit longer and be with us. And he said, "Where do you think I got all of this from? I got it from all of you, right?" So I don't think he was speaking from like a victimhood place, right? I don't think he was taking on the role of being a martyr, for example, but I think he was just demonstrating like this is sometimes part of the work is that perhaps we are able to learn how to process our own stuff. We become unafraid of our own content, unafraid of our own emotions. We see that these are just fleeting emotions arising and passing away. We go through our own process in that way, and then we say, okay, I know how to digest stuff. I can do this for other people in some capacity too. Now, of course, you don't have to do this. Ramana is a great master, but perhaps this is a part of the gift of some of these great masters and healers is that they do just digest it on behalf of other people, maybe. But of course, it comes at a price. Many of these great masters, their bodies took a toll in doing so. Let's hear from MC.
Yeah, hi. Look, one of the things that's really helped me over the years has been I did a course on sort of Chiron healing, where you go through a process of you sort of stand in the middle of the room and you connect up to your higher power, and then you do a big cleanse through your whole body, where you're kind of clearing all of the dross away, and then you open up your feeling center, and then you sort of empty out, in a way, all of the hooks that people might have sort of put into you in the last few weeks or months. And then after that, you bring in some sort of green moss into your feeling center, and then you bring in, if you've got a meeting coming up and you're a bit tense about it, you bring in some other protective stuff around that, and then you kind of close your feeling center off, and you use like little kind of copper pins to sort of close your feeling center down, and then you sort of do another big cleanse, and it really grounds you, and then you sort of silver bubble yourself at the end, and then you disconnect. And I've been using this very successfully for years in order to either create a bit of a bubble around me when I'm going in to meet a group of people that afternoon that I might not think, I don't really want to be there. Or if I've got a rough couple of weeks coming up where I think I got a lot of people, a lot of different energy coming up, I use that silver bubble to protect me over an extended period of time. And it's been a really amazing process. It's something I use all the time now. It's been really successful.
Brilliant. Thank you so much, MC, for sharing. Yeah. Would you say that if somebody felt more drawn to, say, a violet bubble or something of a different material, can it still be as effective?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, I guess I just learned it as a silver bubble, and I liked the silver bubble because it kind of reflects people's energy back out at them if I don't want it, if I don't want to receive it. It's like wearing a mirror. So it kind of, to me, silver worked. I'm sure for other people, it might be yellow or green or blue. Yeah.
Great. Yeah, I just w was curious to see your take on that, just because I feel like you can't get this wrong. It's kind of an opportunity to be a little creative and to make it your own and make it into a way that feels right for you. And I'm happy to hear that that's been so effective for you. Yeah.
Yeah, amazing. I recommend it.
Yeah, great. Thank you so much. Yeah, Angelina adds here, I use a violet pyramid. Yeah, that's great. Yeah, I've heard of people basically building, like in their mind's eye, visually building like structures that expand like miles of sort of defense structures. So you can play around. Let's hear from Brett.
Hi, Brent. Hi, everybody. I just wanted to add about the defense. I set my energetic field to deflect to source for transmutation. So anything coming in at me that I don't want, anything negative or intentionally hostile, I will deflect it automatically back to source for transmutation. And that takes you completely out of the feedback equation. And it's super useful. I learned that because I was inadvertently caught in a shamanic battle that I did not know that I was in, and I had no shamanic skills. So that one that I learned came at a very high cost. And it's on right now. Like I keep that on permanently. So I just wanted to let anybody know that that works and it works very well.
Brilliant. Thank you for going through that, I imagine, very challenging initiation to share that with us. Yeah. Sometimes we get initiated into our gifts through great challenges like that. Another way that I've seen it done, though a little bit more perhaps demanding, rather than deflection, is you can see that your heart is like a vortex that takes things in and then shoots it up to the crown, where it gets launched into this the source, into source, back into source. So your body becomes this like transmutation machine, in a sense. So you don't hold it in your heart, you let it pass through your heart up to the crown and back into source. And that's one way that you can use your system. But, you know, like Brett was sharing, deflection is also a very effective option as well. Okay, let's hear from Allison.
No, I've done that too, kind of by accident, or sometimes I've done energy work and I can feel it going up my arms through my body and in, but into the ground. And I don't even know, like it's not intentional. It just kind of happens sometimes. And I know that nothing stuck to me. I know it just went cleanly through me and absorbed into the ground. And it worked better than just doing the, like it's like the Reiki wasn't working fully. So it just needed a little bit of like a vacuum. It kind of felt like I was like a vacuum sucking it out, but the vacuum was actually the earth. And I was just the hose, maybe.
Yeah, very cool. Yeah, back up to source or back into the earth. The way I see
Yeah.
it, it's generally speaking all the same. But that's cool that it just happens to you spontaneously, naturally, not doing anything. It's just that's the natural direction that it wants to flow.
Yeah.
Very cool. Okay. Thank you all so much for sharing today. For supporting one another. We're going to wrap up here. I'm going to type some links in the chat if you would like to explore any of these things. Tomorrow we've got a Kundalini Q&A meeting at 2 p.m. Eastern. I appreciate all of your support, your donations, your engagement here. Thank you so much. I mentioned my course, Grounded Spiritual Emergence and Integration. I've typed a link there in the chat. We've got some openings for some one-to-one meetings if anyone would like to go deep with me. Thank you all so much. Check out kundaliniawareness.org. Like I said, March 2026, we're having that global meditation. Get some sleep, everybody. Thank you so much for joining tonight. I see all of your love in the chat. Appreciate you all.